those people outside the circle, I mean, there's so much beauty and potential in those people who have experiences and wounds and sickness that make them uniquely capable of providing the rest of us with some help, with some hope. Let's turn our attention or open up to those possibilities.
Hello, I'm David Mills. Welcome to Still Processing, a part of the Founders Table. I'm wired to touch the world like Jesus. As someone who is apostolic and evangelistic, that means I'm passionate about getting people on mission and helping them take new steps toward Him. I love to live on the margin between the church and the marketplace. And I'm joined by Amy Alexander.
Hey there. I love seeing people inside and outside of church empowered to be on mission every single day. I'm gifted to display Jesus to the world as I teach what's true and shepherd people in their journey. These Still Processing episodes are designed to help you continue chewing on the ideas, truths, stories, and conversations you had during your weekly foundation session. In a world where answers are a Google search away, we recognize that time spent in community and time spent with Jesus brings about deeper, more meaningful revelation. So let's dive in and process together. Welcome back, everybody. We're in Still Processing for week 7. This week is titled Jesus on Purpose. And I think there's so much to talk about in terms of compassion and how do we do Jesus on purpose without being Bible thumper? I don't know, just weird. Like there's so many weird examples of the way that businesses try to be Christians. So I think that's a lot of what we could process today. We have as our guest today, Jonathan Mills. He happens to be my brother, but he is an extremely deep thinker. You will find by the end of this, you'll probably have like 20 sound bites that you want to grab. Something fancy Jonathan said that's meaningful. Jonathan, introduce yourself if you don't mind.
Yes, absolutely. My name is Jonathan. That's true. So I have a background as a business analyst, doing a lot of back office operation, automation, configuration, process development, right? So I'm kind of that guy who's got a spreadsheet and a diagram and is writing down requirements for the things you want to happen and then figuring out how to make it happen. I've done that primarily supporting federal agencies in the past, and I enjoyed that work. But what I found myself drawn to and what I left full-time contracting for is to apply that design and analysis mind and approach to organizational culture and human experience. I find that there's a big gap in the way organizations run, businesses run, and leaders think and act where we're not paying diligent attention to the human experience, and we're not paying attention to the human experience through the boring stuff, like process, and policy, and just various organizational
design.
What do
you mean? Policy is just like text on paper. It doesn't affect me. What are you talking about?
No, policy. All of that boring stuff is an extension of leadership. It's an extension of our human expression. So we have this responsibility in designing places for people to work to pay attention to how all of that throwaway stuff shapes the environment and shapes the human experience.
So you have a really cool thing. And I think this really fits into processing compassion because over the years, you know, being your sister, I've had a front row seat to see the way that your empathy toward people has turned into action, has turned into this compassionate movement toward trying to solve this big problem for people. Dave and I have found over a lot of very practical time. I mean, Dave, you have spent years actually implementing this idea about compassion, but even in the Bible, Jesus, like before he acts every time, it says he saw them and he was had compassion. And so the compassion is what moves us into like doing the things the Lord has for us. So that was a lot of words, but if you don't mind, share with us your infinite leadership thing, because I think it's so good.
Well, sure. part of the exercise of exploring organizational culture, human workplaces, is trying to get outside of norms and outside of traditions to rethink from scratch. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel, but I am observing that we live in standardized systems and traditions. And in those instances, we stop exploring what's possible. We stop exploring alternatives and non-traditional ideas. In the course of that, I observed that with leadership and the concept and practice of leadership, we have those standardized practices where organizations place structure ahead of leadership, right? So structure precedes leadership. And that means that leadership can only ever be in the shape of what the organization has planned.
Sure.
It can only ever be in those sort of traditional models. But while we are existing in that routine, the human creature, right? Human beings are infinitely diverse in everything that makes them unique, right? So people have very distinct experiences and outlooks, very distinct talents and skills and compassionate, you know, drives and talents and ideas. And if you were to really open yourself up, if we really opened up to those highly varied capabilities is what they are, right? People have all these unique sources of insight, sources of behavior, sources of ideas and outlooks and methodology. Those are all expressions of leadership, unique capabilities of leadership, unique ways to influence people directly and indirectly. So the idea behind infinite leadership is, let's set those traditional models aside. We're not going to destroy them. We're not going to banish them. We're just going to put them to the side.
Sure.
And we're going to spend intentional time exploring what might be possible. We're going to spend time with people, growing to understand their experiences and their sort of unique abilities and interests and concerns. And then we're going to do the systematic work of mapping those leadership abilities and possibilities to the organization's needs.
Sure.
So let's go into the wild and explore, and then let's bring that into our standardized spaces and edit those spaces to adopt brand new leadership capabilities and expressions. So the shape of the organization goes from being very boxy to being much rounder, much more human-like.
Yeah.
And hopefully we get some brand new ideas about leadership through the process.
That's so awesome. I love it. Thanks for sharing that. So again, I think it's such a good example of where compassion leads our efforts. I mean, you have gone into a whole space that half exists and half doesn't, simply out of a compassion for and seeing people suffer. I mean, you've seen what it means to have a weird hierarchy of control and how that can be transformed. The video we watched this last week, I mean, in terms of just thinking about what are we processing, I thought it was so interesting. This family, they went through their own stuff, and then they came back to the office. They decided to restart another construction company. They got some people. They liked the people. They built some houses with the people. And then they started to run background checks. And they started, I mean, the woman, like, I could totally relate to what the wife was talking about. She starts to look at what these people have done. And it freaked her out. She's like, I don't even know how can we keep working with these people? They've done horrible things. They've been to jail for it, all these things. So I don't know. It was an interesting story. And I wonder how many people have bypassed the process of letting God activate compassion and have just said, oh, that's not appropriate. We can't have that here. And just like moved right along.
This idea of kind of the artificial categories that we put around people. And we talked last week about how Jesus blew up all these categories, and he came into a world in which, like, there was these strict rules about who's righteous. You know, if you followed all of these rules, and I've quoted the number of rules that are in the Jewish rabbinic teaching, it's like a ridiculous number of rules. And so if you did all these rules, then you were righteous. If you didn't do all these rules, or you couldn't afford to do all these things, then you were unrighteous. And so whole categories of people were considered to be unclean, unrighteous. You don't talk to them. You don't all that, right? So what you're saying, Jonathan, is interesting. And we didn't talk about this last week, but really Jesus blew up these categories. And if we're going to see the kingdom move through us in our life, we have to be willing to let him define the categories. So there's a concept called bounded set and centered set, which I will share a picture of for those who cannot see it. So we'll describe it so you can understand it. So what we have is, you can imagine a bunch of dots all over the page, and those dots represent people. And what we do in human society is we draw circles around those who are inside versus those who are out. And we create these categories of people that are acceptable or unacceptable, they're members or non-members, they're customers, not customers. And the problem with that is that it really takes God out of the picture in terms of how we think about people. And so that's called a bounded set, right? So there's a circle around a certain group of people. And this, in Jonathan's case, it would be leaders, right? A certain kind of leader fits, another kind of leader doesn't fit. However, Jesus' approach to this was really different. He used what was a centered set. So picture the same group of dots or little people all over a screen. And in the center is a target, is God. And so now, instead of drawing a circle around those who are in and those who are out, what we do is we draw arrows indicating the directionality of those people's lives. Are they headed toward God? Are they headed away from God or in some other direction? And so Jesus really intersected people on their way toward God. And that's really the story of the prodigal son, right? The minute he was in the pig pen, at some point in his life, something changes in his heart. He goes, oh man, my father's slaves have it better than I do. I'm tired of eating pig slop and fighting the pigs for some scraps. I'm going home. At that moment, like, there's this change that occurs. And his life trajectory is turning. And so the problem we have is we don't know all the things that are happening in people's lives. We don't know automatically whether they're headed toward God or away from God. And so Jesus' approach was, he was intersecting people who everybody else thought were way far away from God. They were outside the circle, you know? And so I think that there's this explosion of categories that he does. He was selecting all kinds of crazy people. We talked about that last week. Like, who would pick these people? Who would want these people on their team, you know? So I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. And by the way, the second thing is called a centered set. You could look it up online. Bounded set is when we draw a line and keep people in or out. And then a centered set is directionality. Where are they headed?
I love these two concepts because we think about discipling people. You might maybe hear the idea of discipling people who are on their way to Jesus, or pre-discipleship, or whatever. Church only really only introduces discipleship after you've said some sort of magical prayer. But there's a lot of conversation around, how do you disciple people before that? And this is such a great visualization to recognize that literally anyone can be discipled toward Jesus. The way Jesus did it was a series of challenges. You know, he sees you, he says, Matthew, come follow me. Challenge one. The minute Matthew said, okay, he started his arrow centered toward Jesus. Now, is Matthew all the things that a righteous person is? Of course not. We're all on that path. And then at some point that only Jesus knows, Matthew became someone that was always going to be with Jesus. Well, that was a forever disciple, right? Like, really, salvation happened, and we don't know at what point that is. But I think as entrepreneurs, when we begin to really understand centered set, we begin to recognize people's potential way before a pastor or the average church says you should be noticing that, right?
In the journals for this week, plugged in the parable of the great banquet, right? I always read around the stuff. Like, I always do, because I don't take for granted what it says, right? I'm like, give me more context, give me more sort of story. And there, before that, Jesus is at a meal. He's at a meal at like a Pharisee's house, and he's observing the way that people seat themselves when they show up. And they've got this behavior of like, okay, I'm here. Let me find the best seat that I can, right? The seat with the most honor. And so people are seating themselves in the best seats of honor that they can. And he sees this behavior and he's like, don't do that. Find the seat of least honor for yourself. Put yourself in a much more humble position and let the persons who's running the banquet lift you up, if that's right. Let yourself be honored by somebody else who's going to elevate you from that seat. But then Jesus goes further and he's, gosh, what did he say? Oh yeah, basically, if you're running a banquet, if you're the person running it, instead of inviting a bunch of people that you know can give you a return favor later, right? It's like, you're not inviting people to this banquet to serve them and feed them so that they can pay you back, so that they can bring you into their social circle and give you some kind of return service and elevate you. Instead, invite the people that could not give you back anything. Invite people that don't walk, who can't see, who are sick, the people that are outside the circle that's acceptable. And so, I don't know. I mean, I take it as related to this topic. Yeah. And that
you just described basically all kind of modern networking.
Right? Well, yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. But like in our thinking and our purpose professionally, our human behavior is, let me establish and protect my status.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to stay away from people that are not acceptable socially. That's going to be like people who've been to prison, people who have visible diseases, people who have a lisp, people who are openly gay. It's just, there's a lot of people that are not socially acceptable to Christians.
Yeah, that's a big one.
It is a tighter group of people that we religiously and socially accept, and those people outside the circle. I mean, there's so much beauty and potential in those people who have experiences and wounds and sickness that make them uniquely capable of providing the rest of us with some help, help. Let's turn our attention or open up to those possibilities.
Well, what you described before that was really a story of humbling ourselves. You know, who is it? Is it Paul or Peter that says, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought? Which one is it? Okay. Well, either way.
One or the other.
One of the two. But I think it's an Paul. Activity. Okay. It's Paul. It's an activity that, like, if for instance, for myself, recently, the Lord has been exposing me to dark things. And what I mean by that is I grew up in a very safe home, in a Jesus-loving home. I have not had horrible traumatic things, relatively speaking, happen to me. And so I am extremely innocent in terms of what depths are people really willing to go to? What is the deepest, like, what is really possible as humans? And he has been personally having me interact with people and share stories of just deep trauma and deep darkness that's so close to me, even geographically or middle class, like people who I can easily relate to, realizing, oh, their lives are full of the kind of darkness I could not have fathomed. Couldn't have imagined someone doing that or experiencing that. And so I think sometimes the humbling isn't just about, oh, I think so highly of myself, like I think I'm better than someone else. Sometimes the humbling is about, like, exposing us to things and helping us. I don't even know how to articulate it. In my own life, it's been a recognition of the kind of pain I cannot relate to, so that I can be compassionate toward a whole new set of people or a whole new set of experiences. And it's not that I necessarily had self-righteousness, but I was above it in my own heart because I didn't understand it. And I needed to be lowered, you know?
Mm. That's good. Yeah, so I heard an interesting speaker recently talking about the way that people change their beliefs or they come to faith. And so traditionally, like in the Billy Graham era, we would say, you believe first, and then you come forward, and then you belong, right? So you believe, act, and belong. But really, what's happening in our culture today and the way that Jesus did it is that it's really about experience followed by a sense of belonging in which he would explain things to people and then they would eventually believe. So there's this generosity to Jesus. And we see it in the story of the parable, the great banquet is a good example. All the miracles, the feeding of the 5,000, you know, even the calling of the disciples, there's this extreme generosity in which he is giving people, he's inviting them to this great feast, and they get to experience food they'd never have had before, right? And it's way above their station in life. And eventually, you know, they belong to something because of that experience. I'm one of the people that went to the Sermon on the Mount, or I was there when he multiplied the baskets. Now they're part of this group. And then we see, like in the book of Acts, Peter preaches a sermon, 5,000 people get saved like that. Well, it's because they experience this generosity. And there's a scripture that says it's the kindness of God that leads to repentance. And it's true on a couple levels. One level is if he doesn't give you faith, you can't believe anyway. And so you can't come to God, right? So it's just his kindness that even enables you to have enough faith to be converted. But there's also this rich generosity in Jesus, I think. And then, and the second thing we talked about last week, which I think is connected, is the sense that he does use compassion to guide us to people that he wants us to be with and be and to serve, you know. So I think this whole piece of compassion, we separate it from business like almost entirely. That's like we have our charity budget, we pick a cause, we write a check. Done. But there's something more here. And I will say, you know, also that businesses, a lot of small businesses start simply because they recognize an underserved group of people. Like they see like this group of people have been excluded because they can't afford the predominant service or they've been isolated from it, you know? So I think it's a really rich conversation.
I'm curious, Jonathan, if you can think back to what sparked a sense of like seeing people that were unseen or beginning to have compassion. What sort of catalyzed you in the direction that you're currently moving?
I have, since I was young, always dreamed about being a hero, you know, which is sort of like dreaming about breaking chains and opening cages for people. That may just be like a sort of like a childish human kind of thing, or it might be something more. I don't know.
I don't think every child's like, I want to break chains and get people out. I think that's particular to you.
Maybe, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, as always, every kind of choice I've ended up making toward trying to work on this kind of thing has been a combination of like my sense of justice being violated and also my own desire to be a free person, right? Most of my motivating experiences through work have been my own experiences, not my observations of others, right? So I'm not sure that's compassionate. That's me not being listened to, me feeling like people aren't talking and communicating when they should. And it seems wrong.
So a strong sense of justice. So you're saying you have like a strong sense of justice as you look at as your own experiences, but for others too, right?
Well, I mean, it is universal.
It's universal to you. What I'm getting at, Jonathan, is that it's one of the giftings of Ephesians 4 is to have this prophetic sense about you that views injustice and it really bothers you. Right. And of course, if it happens to you, then obviously it really bothers you. But not everybody would externalize that to other people. But a lot of entrepreneurs, like they are motivated because they just have this sense of injustice about them.
Yeah.
So I think it's a real thing and it's a powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the flip side of that, we have counseled our fair share of entrepreneurs who do not know where their compassion lies. I mean, they really don't. Like, point blank, you ask them and they cannot figure out, you know, is there something about your employees that is an injustice to you that you could feel compassionate about? Something about your vendors? Something about the industry? Nothing. Could not draw an answer for the life of them. And, I think back to our catalyst, Dave, you and I, in starting Founders Table, our catalyst was actually just asking the question. It was a moment of, Lord, give us the eyes to see. Because that's what he did, right? The Holy Spirit would give Jesus the eyes to see and then have compassion. And then Jesus moved. And so sometimes I think we just forget to ask. Like we forget to say, Jesus, who's in my realm of influence? Or who's right on the periphery that I didn't even know I had access to, that I'm not seeing, that actually I can move in compassion toward? And that's a really powerful question to ask. I mean, as worked, because the answer to our question was entrepreneurs. And we didn't even know what to do with that for like a long time. I mean, a long time. We were like, I guess that's the answer. Like, what are they even, why, how, it was a weird answer at the time.
One of the challenges that I've had is that I am very process oriented. I see diagrams and shapes is how I think. And I'm always concerned with how we are doing things, the process of doing things, because of how that affects people. But I compare myself to other ways of being that are much more focused on directly supporting people. And so I question, is this interest of mine have anything to do with like serving God or building the kingdom or helping people? Because I'm just like trying to, I'm interested in making the workplace, I want to say better is easy to say, but really what I want to do is, I want the workplace to be flipped on its head. And I want people doing the work. I want the people who are part of an organization to be cared for and part of a shared experience and not subordinate and not suppressed and put down.
Jonathan, I think the question I would ask to go with that is, you know, like this whole prophetic wiring that people have that creates this kind of sense of injustice, sometimes that goes toward fixing the injustice for the injustice's sake. You know, this is wrong. I will fight until I die to fix it. But the other, but really in the Bible, the redemptive New Testament prophetic drive is about realigning people with God's heart. Right? So it's caring about them. So there is, it has compassion in it. So it's injustice, but it's desiring to align people with God's heart and the heart that God has for people. And I think there's a big difference between the two. Because you can go off on a crusade to just do whatever, you know, fight against expensive video service charges, which Amy and I were talking about earlier today. Ridiculous usury being charged to us, man and man, was a major ripoff. But I think the question is, how do we make sure that we're lining up with what God's heart is? I think like just spending time asking God, you know, David prayed, you know, give me a clean heart, O God. And I think as we align our hearts with God, then naturally he, you know, the Bible says he wills and works for us to do his will. He wills and works in us. And so our heart begins to align with his heart. And it not only heals us of the things that we've experienced personally, but it also gives us this bigger thing. But like some people, that is not turned on.
Yeah.
Somehow it's gotten shut down, you know?
Well, and on the note of just asking, I mean, again, I think it was last week. We're running a nonprofit. We don't get any kind of income doing that. And so we also have our for-profit. And so we're, like so many entrepreneurs like us, we're struggling with what are the activities we need to be focusing on right now? Because if I look at our budget document, I can see we need more clients. But I also have a lot to get done in terms of this compassionate thing the Lord has us doing. And so we're sitting there kind of talking about, what do we need to spending time on? Maybe we need to set down stuff for the nonprofit for a week and focus on this and whatever. And so I said, you know, let's just ask and then see what he says. And I felt the Lord saying, hey, ask me to set your attention on things. Ask me to give you energy. So I asked, Lord, give us energy and point our attention to the things we need to be doing. And help us to not have energy for stuff we're not supposed to be doing and have zero interest in doing things we're not supposed to be spending time on. And literally, the next phone call we had was in fellowship with another Christian entrepreneur who said the same exact same words out of my prayer on this exact same topic. And so we spent the rest of the week mostly on stuff that didn't make us any money. And it was awesome because that's where the Lord was pointing our attention. But like literally all we had to do was just ask. So I didn't have some kind of magical answer, but what we did have was attention and interest and passion and energy for the things he wanted us to focus on. it was cool and it was fun.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Well, so what you're saying to us, Amy, is that we should just ask more. We should ask him and we should trust him to do it.
And I think that's what I'm processing out loud here. Yes.
Yeah. And I guess for you, Jonathan, you know, sorting out, God, is this you? Is this me? How is this a God thing? You know, he knows. Like, he knows how to sort it out. He can separate the division between flesh and spirit, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
But it is what so many of us struggle with. I mean, I think, John, you've just spoken to something that a lot of people, myself included, but a lot of people listening, we struggle with these.
Yeah.
Are we spending our time on the right things?
Yeah, and we raise the issue, like when we talk about compassion at all, we raise the issue of, oh, well, I'm not in business to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in business to do this. So why would I be doing that? Why would I be helping those people?
Well, this has been an interesting discussion. Thank you all for processing out loud.
Before we go, Amy, Jonathan's still processing. I can see it in his face.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan, what are you processing that you still want to say? Because I know you're a big processor.
I am a big processor. It's true. I don't know. I mean, knowing that I'm in a design of some kind, the question stops being, how do I get to God's will? And more, how do I make myself easier to get there?
That's good. Yeah.
But I don't know. Also, developing a professional life, developing an organization that is not, it's not just being centered on Christ, it's being founded on Christ. And that's, it's not a Christian thing. It's a Jesus thing.
Yeah.
And I want to be open to that looking like whatever it is that he has planned, because it isn't something that I preconceive, just like people are not what we preconceive them to be. It's like, if you get back to the parable, right? If you get invited to a banquet and you accept the invitation and then you don't show up, the person holding the banquet is like, you know what? Okay, let me invite anyone. It's just like the seat of honor is to be held by the weakest.
It's counterculture, but it is kingdom culture. And Jesus loves to break rules, you know, he loves to reshape. But I love what you said, Jonathan, about this being a Jesus thing. And that might be very surprising what that actually looks like, right? Because it's not what we preconceive it to be. So that's so cool. Well, thank you for hanging out with us and talking about this today. I think it's been a rich conversation. And I know that you will not stop processing this, but we'll have to pick that up another day.
I never stop processing. Never.
It's like a computer in there. All right, guys. We'll see you next week for week 8. Enjoy processing.
Thank you.